Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The first phase of a ceasefire agreement in Gaza is now in effect. More hostages released today in exchange for Palestinian prisoners held in Israel. ABC's Ian Pendle's in Tel Aviv's Hostage Square, where hostage families rallied every week for more than a year.
Incredibly emotional scenes in Hostages Square today. People were cheering, people were clapping, people were chanting, get them all out.
Meanwhile, a source in the Gaza Interior Ministry telling ABC News that more than 550 humanitarian aid trucks have entered through checkpoints since the ceasefire began this morning, a massive increase. Despite an international outage intentional from TikTok and then an announcement reinstating the app to U.S. users and crediting President-elect Trump, internet service providers and app stores still seem to be complying with a new law that bans their allowing the download and updating of the Chinese-owned app in the U.S. Trump said he will pause the ban. This is ABC News. Firefighters made some progress on the Palisades fire Saturday in Los Angeles, crediting the low clouds and good humidity levels for getting the containment at 43%, up from 39% Friday. Also good news out of Altadena, California on the Eaton fire, 73% contained, but dry weather and another Santa Ana wind event expected. Fire analyst Dennis Burns with an update during the Altadena community meeting.
The red flag warning has been issued by Oxnard. We're on track to see those winds ramp up Monday afternoon through the evening, probably strongest overnight.
The National Weather Service reporting some isolated wind gusts could reach 50 to 60 miles per hour. 2024 saw a historic drop in homicides and other violent crimes compared to the year before. That from a report on U.S. crime numbers from the Chicago Crime Lab. Some cities saw small decreases, including New York, which had 14 fewer homicides, but others had large decreases, including Philadelphia. Dave Packer, ABC News.
No more mold, no more damage, no more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass-treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anytime at the WISS website at WISS.FM.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Voters will decide whether Wisconsin's voter ID law will be added to the state constitution. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Voters will see the proposal on the April 1st ballot. If approved, the state constitution would be amended, which would make the change much harder to repeal in the future. Proponents insist stricter ID requirements help to prevent voter fraud, but opponents, including Jay Heck with Common Cause Wisconsin, say they provide a partisan advantage for Republicans.
All it does is it reduces the opportunity for certain segments of the population to be able to vote. It doesn't do anything about preventing fraud, and it's just a voter suppression method.
Heck says he believes the measure will attract more conservatives to the polls in April. And even if voters reject the idea of changing the Constitution, the state's voter ID requirement, which is among the strictest in the country, would remain. The state's voter ID law has been long debated for its prohibitive requirements. Wisconsin allows seven forms of identification that can be presented at the polls, but Heck explains they have to meet particular requirements.
These are forms of ID that, although they seem on the surface to make some sense, they're very difficult for some segments of the population to obtain.
Heck adds rushing to put these requirements in the state constitution is strategic given the state Supreme Court justice ballot the measure will share. In more than 40 years, the Conservative Heritage Foundation lists only 68 cases of voter fraud in Wisconsin. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. Support for this reporting was provided by Carnegie Corporation of New York.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Cold weather advisory in effect for today. We'll see sunny skies, highs between 0 and 5 above, but wind chills, they'll be down around 15 to 20 below zero or colder thanks to a gusty northwest wind near 10 below tonight. Right now, it's 1.
John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, everybody, have a great weekend. On Monday, we'll find out exactly how cold it's going to get with Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
And we'll check in with Sam Floyd from Operation Coffee in our Veterans Salute. Join us.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 9.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
First up on this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from the Dom Salvia Show. Dom welcomed on attorney Jim Santel and Jack Kelly, State House reporter for Wisconsin Watch, to discuss the upcoming April Wisconsin Supreme Court race. With the current 4-3 Supreme Court split, April's elections could flip the court once again.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be a part, 855-752-4842. Jess P.S. on the board across the desk. James Santel, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review. You can check him out on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. And jazzed as hell to introduce to you Jack Kelly. He's a State House reporter with WisconsinWatch.org. And he has a recent piece out talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court election. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dom. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for coming around, man. This is going to be a very expensive election.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be shaping up that way. You know, both Brad Schimmel, the conservative candidate, and Susan Crawford, the liberal candidate, just this week did some self-reporting of their fundraising numbers, and they broke the record for this period in time. Schimmel did, reporting first, and then Crawford came along and broke it again, and that's just the candidates. So never mind the fact once we get into the state parties and outside groups, and a lot of people are going to be watching this race. It's kind of the first race across the entire country since November that will have a lot of eyeballs. So it'll certainly be expensive.
Very expensive. A lot of dark money. And wow, records for this reporting term for both candidates. That's amazing. That's amazing, Jack. The production, let's call it, out of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, only 14 cases decided, kind of slow. What's your take on that, Jack?
You know, I think it is interesting and it is unique. If you compare the court's most recent term, the kind of 23-24 term, if you will, to prior terms. Yeah, only 14 cases, though they were certainly some high-profile cases. So I think if you were to ask folks familiar or the justices themselves, they might say, yeah, okay, maybe on paper it looks like we didn't do that much, but actually we took on some of these massive cases that can be quite time-consuming and involve a lot of fact-finding to some degree, which the Supreme Court, as Jim could tell you, is not equipped to do necessarily in the way that a trial court is.
Yeah.
And so it can certainly contribute to that. But yeah, no, it's certainly an outlier. I mean, typically the state Supreme Court takes and disposes of, that's the technical term, dispose of, settles 50, 60 cases in a term.
Wow.
That's been kind of the 20th century average. Of course, things change. For a long time, Wisconsin did not have a court of appeals. So if you lost in circuit court, your only recourse was to appeal to the state Supreme Court. So, of course, they were hearing a lot more cases in those years back in the day. But, 14 was certainly a low output by any measure when you compare it to prior years.
And I think this statistic kind of goes along with the former conservative Wisconsin Supreme Courts. Of those 14 cases, only four of them were settled along a 4-3 ideological lines. And in my understanding, based on the history of the previous conservative courts, that's not uncommon. Most cases are solved, if not unanimously, certainly with large majorities. Is the court as biased, biased, maybe that's the wrong term, as political or ideologically split as some people think? I mean, one would think that perhaps, you know, all 14 of those cases would have been across ideological lines.
You know, that is a really interesting question. I'm certain that depending on who you ask, you would get a different answer.
Yeah, right.
I will say that when you look at the 4-3 cases, they were ones that you might expect to be settled along 4-3 along ideological lines. 4 liberal justices in the majority, the 3 current conservative justices in the minority. It was the redistricting case, of course, which Democrats were eager to bring once Justice Janet Protasiewicz was sworn in. Obviously, there had been a really long, drawn-out saga of redistricting litigation after the 2020 census. It was, I mean, honestly, it is a little bit unusual for it to come up again so soon. Also, the case about the use of unstaffed absentee ballot drop boxes. Mm-hmm. The then conservative-controlled court just a couple of years ago outlawed them in Wisconsin. 3 of those 4 justices that voted in that are still on the court. Now, of course, they believe that their decision should still be in place, but they were, you know, in the minority at that point. So the other 2, I mean, were maybe a little less surprising. One of them involved a Catholic Charities Bureau and whether or not they qualify for an exemption from having to pay into the state's unemployment program. And the 4th one, it was an eminent domain case, whether or not the village of Egg Harbor up in Door County could take a piece of land from a restaurant so that they could build a sidewalk. So maybe not that controversial. And there were political cases that they settled. 6-1. I look at the Evers versus Markline case, which was all about the so-called legislative veto and whether or not the Joint Finance Committee and the legislature could block certain conservation projects. They got together and 6-1 agreed with the governor on that one, with Rebecca Bradley, who is maybe the most outspoken conservative member of the court, siding with her liberal colleagues in that one. So, and Jack, it's not always so straightforward.
Right, Jack, you make a great point, too. We forget that whether it's the United States Supreme Court, the Supreme Courts of all the states, the majority of the cases that they address are not taking headlines of the sort that you report on routinely, right? Right. And maybe there's a reason for that. An awful lot of procedural things happen, right? And a lot of things need to be resolved that, you know, important to lawyers, very important for the litigants themselves, but they just don't attract that attention. And for that reason, again, and they do not partake of partisan views when it comes to resolving them. Understanding how the federal rules of civil procedure work or how the state criminal code should be applied. Those things may not always fall down along partisan lines, and that's the reason why you get the majority of them.
And those are boring headlines.
That's the point. Right?
That's
James Santel.
They're not interested in those cases, typically.
Right. That's James Santel, former U.S. attorney. We're joining Jack Kelly. He's a State House reporter with WisconsinWatch.org. One of my go-to places to check out local news here, folks, I suggest you do so as well, WisconsinWatch.org. Okay, Jack, let's do the what-ifs. Right. So we have 2 candidates. One's a conservative, one's a liberal. Let's go down that road. If Susan Crawford, the quote unquote liberal candidate, wins, what happens then?
Well, let's be clear, Dom. There's no way to know for certain, but there are certainly clues of how these things could happen. Susan Crawford, Dane County judge, prominent in the Madison legal community for several years. I mean, was an attorney that was involved in a legal challenge to Act 10 back when Act 10 was first coming around, has represented Planned Parenthood in litigation. Prominent figure. She's endorsed by the 4 current liberal justices. Mm. There is no primary now that the filing deadline has come and gone. And so it was pretty clear that in the kind of liberal legal world, the justices were setting the agenda of who they wanted the candidate to be.
Yeah.
So I think, you could extrapolate. And, and not necessarily the most recent term is not a great example of this, but the liberal justices do disagree with each other on certain cases. So there's no certain way to say for sure she's just going to fall in line and lockstep and do everything with them. But
sure,
it seems likely that you will get a court more akin to the one that we have today if Susan Crawford is elected.
And that would give the liberal courts the majority up until what, at least 2028?
Yeah, that's right, because the way that it works here in Wisconsin, justices are elected to 10-year terms. They happen in April. And you were joking about it being election season again. Dom, it's going to be election season for eternity in Wisconsin because we have a state Supreme Court race, of course, coming up in a few months in April. But then we have a state Supreme Court race in April of 2026, of 2027, of 2028, of 2029, and of 2030. So there won't be a reprieve from these kind of high-profile elections. But the way that they fall, if Susan Crawford wins, the next two justices that are up for re-election are Rebecca Bradley and Chief Justice Annette Ziegler, who are both conservative members.
And those are coming up in the next subsequent following 2 years?
That's right, 2026 and 2027, respectively.
So if Susan Crawford were to lose this election, for those on the left that are hoping that she wins, we'll get another crack at it coming up in the next year, the following year.
Two opportunities to have a go at it. The interesting thing, maybe, and this is the other side of your question, is the what if Brad Schimmel wins, what happens? We actually have an idea of this. You know, we would go back to a court of kind of the 2020 to 2023 era where Justice Brian Hagedorn, who's kind of the quieter, less kind of more unassuming member of the court, doesn't quite get into it with his colleagues in the way that some of the other justices do, would have a lot of influence during that 3-year period.
Yeah.
He was the decision maker. There were 61 cases, I believe, settled 4-3 along ideal law, or 4-3. He was in the majority, the four justices majority, in 50 of those 61 cases. He is the person that really is the deciding vote when it comes to things. So, you know, we have an idea of where both things are going to be, you know, kind of keep the liberal court as is, and also, you know, kind of re-empower Brian Hagedorn to have a lot of influence up at the Capitol building.
Jack Kelly, State House reporter at WisconsinWatch.org, has a piece out today, I guess yesterday. You also mentioned political discord empowers the court. What do you mean by that, Jack?
Well, this is not my idea, and it's maybe not a new idea, and I'm sure Jim will be able to point to many examples of this. But the idea that right now the more traditionally political branches of government in Wisconsin, the legislature and the governor, don't see eye to eye very often. Of course, they do reach compromise, and they work things out. But oftentimes they don't. Oftentimes they're suing each other, and oftentimes they're landing at court, because when those two branches can't work together, somebody has to answer the question. Typically, it becomes the court. And so, you know, I was talking to a law professor at Marquette, a guy named Chad Oldfather, super knowledgeable. And he described it in the piece, I believe I mentioned, he said something along the lines of, you know, in America, all questions tend to become legal questions. And in the current political environment that we are in, it seems to be happening more often.
Everything eventually goes to the law.
We look more and more to the judges. Frankly, Jack, I suspect your piece kind of supports this notion to decide policy, right? When you think about all the things that are in the courts these days, whether it's the circuit courts, the appellate courts here in Wisconsin, from the Supreme Court, federally, look at all of the, I mean, even something as simple as TikTok, right? Tomorrow, we're going to be hearing about that in the Supreme Court. Social media issues, healthcare issues, education. You mentioned, again, of course, the voting issues, Jack, all these kinds of things. We used to think that that's a legislative thing, right? And maybe the governor says yes or no, and we've got a fight between them. We are way beyond the time when Supreme Court Chief Justice said, I just call balls and strikes. That's not the case anymore, right? We're addressing these big ticket policy issues on a regular basis.
And Jack,
yeah, certainly is happening. I mean, it's going to happen twice next week. We have two cases coming before the state Supreme Court, you know, and they're very technical to your point. It's about whether or not an agency needs to promulgate rules before it can enforce something or the other thing. But the reality is that it'll be boiled down to, can the executive branch do policymaking? And in the other case, it's, can the state DNR enforce the spill law if somebody, you know, if there's PFAS contamination on a business's property, et cetera. So there's real world consequences for these very technical questions.
Yes, they are. Jack Kelly, State House reporter, WisconsinWatch.org. Jack, thank you so much for coming around. Please do so again
as news
continues to break. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. Come back 855-752-4842.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. A new choice. The Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. WISS.
My friends swim no matter the season, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. Now, thanks to Skyrizi and clear skin, count me in. With Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. 3 out of 4 people achieve 90% clear skin at 4 months. Nothing is everything.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit SkyRizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Valley's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Spotlight, we'll go to the John and Gordy Show. John and Gordy spoke with Pam Bianchi, the fabulous farm babe, this week, about her attendance at the premiere of Green and Gold, the new movie shot in Wisconsin about the Green Bay Packers.
The Green Bay Packers lead the way. A victory is our cry. We have the will to win. We have the finest men. Take the charge to do or die.
That's great stuff.
The Green Bay Packers lead the way.
Yep.
This is John and Gordy in the morning, 92.7 WMDX, and we're playing that because we have Pam Bianchi, the Midwest Farm Report.
Yep.
And she's reporting on the Green and Gold, a new film that's out there.
Good morning, Pam.
Morning. It's not out there yet. It's going to be premiering or debuting, I should say, on January 31st in theaters nationwide.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, no kidding. Wow.
And yeah, you mentioned off the air here that you saw just about 20 minutes of the film. You were at the premiere.
Yeah, they had I'll be honest with you. Last time that I went to a red carpet event, it was when a company revealed a new herbicide. Lambeau Field with a red carpet debut, completely different situation all the way around.
Yeah.
But they had invited in, it was really kind of a family reunion of sorts. So the producer director of the Green and Gold movie, which is a story about a dairy farmer that is struggling to make ends meet and basically bets on the Packers to win the Super Bowl. This is set in the 90s. That's the focal point of Green and Gold, and they had the red carpet kind of premiere at Lambeau Field in the atrium. I was on my holiday vacation, but there's no way you were going to keep me away from that combination.
Absolutely.
Of Lambeau Field and dairy farming. So I speeded over there, and they wrote my name down on a piece of paper and threw it on the floor near the red carpet. That was where I was supposed to stand.
It's pretty formal.
I guess that's the way it goes. Yeah. I wasn't the only one, so I didn't feel like I was being ostracized.
No.
And the good part was I was at the end of the red carpet, so I was the last person they talked to, which meant I had more time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people that I got a chance to visit with was Craig T. Nelson. So as probably people remember, he sang the national anthem last week.
Yes.
And contrary to what you might believe, he actually has quite a bit of tie to not only agriculture, but to Wisconsin.
Mm.
He was telling me a little bit, and I don't know if you guys want to use the clips or not, but he mentioned something about his farming background and why this was not a completely foreign role to him. He's got a farming background.
All right. Well, let's play it.
Yeah.
It comes in the blood. You know, my family's farmers, and they've got the Nelson family farm in Volga, which is still going on. So when I say that, it's tongue-in-cheek. You don't make friends with a lot of cows, and I mean a lot of them. So you kind of have to get to know them, which is like getting to know co-stars who have huge egos. It was fun. I mean, I got a chance to meet a lot of wonderful people and dairy farmers and cattle farmers and wheat farmers and people, you know, that I guess the salt of the earth, really, for me. Very funny people, very, you know, sarcastic, witty. And then you've got the Packers fans who are totally insane. And wonderful. So it's, you know, it's like coming home, really. I mean, my great-grandparents lived in Ettrick, Wisconsin, so in the West. So
sure.
That's where they settled. Oh. And one of my best friends is from Eau Claire. And then one of my other best friends is from Baraboo.
Oh, for the...
Yeah, wow. So we were pretty connected.
So he knows Gordy. Here.
No. Yeah, I'm from Baraboo. No.
Spent a little time in Baraboo.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I thought it was a pretty cool connection. And he was very sincere. He's very tall. Man, he must be over 6 foot. But very sincere about the story that he was telling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, the angle I had was I wanted to know about the farmers that helped them to shoot this. All of it was basically shot up in Door County by Sisters Bay. And the challenge was to find a dairy barn that was still available from that period of time. So they had to turn to local farmers. Now, the two guys that produced it, Davin and, Anders, they are from Upper Michigan originally, but they're farm kids by nature. Their grandfather was farming, and they were out there all the time. That's kind of what inspired them. They told me that they had an offer from another movie studio to take over the project, but that they were going to move the film site out of Wisconsin to a state that had cinema credits. And they said absolutely not. So they walked away from big money to keep it in Wisconsin, in Door County. So 90% of Door County was at the Lambeau Atrium to check this out. And most of them played some kind of a role. A lot of area farmers brought their cattle over so that they, you know, had dairy there in the barn, their equipment and a lot of things like that. And Davin, one of the producer directors, was very honest. He said, we didn't have budget, so a lot of those people volunteered their time, volunteered their livestock, volunteered their equipment,
of course
and
would.
Did it repeatedly.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool. The one story that I thought was kind of funny is they said there's a birthing scene in one of the parts of the movie, and they sat and stared at the rear ends of about a dozen dairy cows on a cold January night waiting for something to happen. After about 12 hours of vigilance, they decided they were giving it up. They got packed up and left. 4 hours later, a dairy farmer's on the phone to them. Get over here fast. It's happening now. And they actually captured it.
Oh.
And it's one of the scenes of the movie they said they've gotten the greatest feedback on. Mm-hmm. People just don't know.
Yeah.
People have no clue about birthing a dairy calf. And so they had to kind of they had to fit that scene in minus Craig and his co-star. But anyhow, I don't want to steal too much of it, but it's just one of those things that you want to know about. Before you walk in, Green and Gold premiering on January 31st. And like I said, if you see people you recognize from Northeast Wisconsin, you are correct because they really kept it close to the vest on how Wisconsin was going to play a role.
Boy, that is so cool. And it's also a message to our Republican legislature to maybe get those cinema credits going again. Seriously,
I thought the same thing. I thought the same thing, that might be something that comes up again, especially if the film gets the critical success that it's seen in some of the independent film competition.
Right, we almost lost the Green Bay Packers. All right, Pam, that is a wonderful story.
Pam Yockey, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Great weekend, guys.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
It's the fabulous Farm Babe, Pam Yockey, Midwest Farm Report.
We should have asked her how it ends, how the movie ends.
No, but she didn't see the whole movie. She only saw 24
she
minutes.
She heard what happened at the end.
All right, we're coming back with more of John and Gordy. Idiocracy right around the corner.
Give a cheer. Fight, fight. Our colors green and gold. We'll stand up bright and bold for Titletown, USA.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. From Oshkosh to Nina, this is 98.3 WISS.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The first phase of a ceasefire agreement in Gaza is now in effect. More hostages released today in exchange for Palestinian prisoners held in Israel. ABC's Ian Pendle's in Tel Aviv's Hostage Square, where hostage families rallied every week for more than a year.
Incredibly emotional scenes in Hostages Square today. People were cheering, people were clapping, people were chanting, get them all out.
Meanwhile, a source in the Gaza Interior Ministry telling ABC News that more than 550 humanitarian aid trucks have entered through checkpoints since the ceasefire began this morning, a massive increase. Despite an international outage intentional from TikTok and then an announcement reinstating the app to U.S. users and crediting President-elect Trump, internet service providers and app stores still seem to be complying with a new law that bans their allowing the download and updating of the Chinese-owned app in the U.S. Trump said he will pause the ban. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Remembering Bob Uecker. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The voice of the Brewers, Bob Uecker, passed away Thursday at the age of 90. Former Brewers owner and baseball commissioner Bud Selig.
Bob and I first met about 1959. You know, that's 65 years. Bob and I used to kid a lot. We were two Milwaukee kids. When I hired him, January of 1971, I said, how'd you like to work for the Brewers? He said, I'd love to. That was it. We never had a contract, never had any broadcast games, and he's done the same with Mark Antanasio. And he was just remarkable. Loyal to Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Talk about things, and he had an unbelievable mind. But he did love the game. I mean, he means so much to Brewer fans and baseball fans. He was one of them, and they knew it.
That's Bud Selig with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Cold weather advisory through Monday. Mostly clear tonight, a low near negative 10. Wind chills as cold as 25 below. On Martin Luther King Day, mostly sunny and frigid. Highs near zero. Wind chills again as cold as 25 below. Right now, it's one above zero.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Native American voters prevailed in federal court against the state of North Dakota, protecting the ability to elect the candidate of their choice. January 13th, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear a redistricting case we covered back in May 2024, affirming a North Dakota Federal Appeals Court decision. The appeals court had dismissed a state house district challenge by two non-native residents who claimed their rights were infringed. The case dates back to 2021 when the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara nations, also known as the MHA nation, negotiated with the state to protect native voting power under the 1965 Voting Rights Act, Section 2. After an agreement, state GOP officials later shamefully reversed positions in 2022, embracing a new GOP tactic which argues such majority-minority districts are a violation of the Equal Protection Clause under the U.S. Constitution. The same argument has been made in Robinson versus Calais over Louisiana's now two majority-minority districts. The MHA Nation decision protects North Dakota State House District 4A and three other districts. Great news for Native voters. But the Louisiana case is expected to be heard in the High Court in early 2025, and the conservative justices seem to have made it their mission to dismantle the VRA. We have links to the history of the case at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Siegel. Hey, Mike.
When I look back on all those years on the road and going on two-lane highways in northern Wisconsin in the dead of winter, it could have been like 10 below outside. One deer jumps out in front of me. I was like, I'm done here.
You're in a ditch and they're not going to find you for 3 days.
Dead deer carcass over there and a dead comedian carcass.
Holding his date book.
Somebody might want to call and cancel him at Zany's next week in Chicago.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, more studies show men are lonely. Why is that? What can be done? Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Pat Kreitlow of Up North News this week sat down with Representative Greta Neubauer and State Senator Sarah Kieski to discuss the opening of the new session of the legislature. Though they had high hopes for bipartisan progress with fair maps, week one has been filled with a Republican rush to pass a voter suppression measure.
A.J. McLean of the Backstreet Boys is 47 today. You can get our history lesson every morning, Monday through Friday at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. Tomorrow on the program, we would normally talk to Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Regular listeners know that he's based in Los Angeles, and things are very crazy there right now and tragic. And Kia is among those who has had to evacuate, so Kia will not be able to join us tomorrow. A couple of our other Courier Newsroom colleagues will be joining me, including Isabel Swasson from Iowa Starting Line, who writes for the Courier Newsroom national team. And also my colleague in North Carolina, Billy Ball, from the Cardinal and Pine. And we've talked briefly about this, but I'm going to ask Billy more about how the North Carolina Supreme Court election may be on the verge of getting hijacked by conservatives and a Trump-appointed judge who may be poised to throw out tens of thousands of legal votes on a technicality so that the conservative candidate could win a seat on the North Carolina Supreme Court. A real, true case of election theft in the making, and we'll talk about that tomorrow morning at 6:30 here on Up North News Radio. But right now, I'm very thrilled to be joined by the Assembly Democratic leader, Greta Neubauer of the Racine area, and brand new State Senator Sarah Kieski of Lodi. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
So nice to have both of you here. We're going to spend a lot of our Thursdays, we hope, talking to a pair of legislators, one from the Senate, one from the Assembly. It's my way of bridging the divide, not between Republican and Democrat, but between Senate and Assembly. Because as we know, and Greta, you've been in the legislature long enough to know that sometimes caucuses of the same party between the Assembly and the Senate could use a little bridging now and then, a little more togetherness, wouldn't you say?
Oh, we're getting along great, Pat.
It's day four.
We're ready to go.
How many times I got accused of having senitude by Assembly members? It's a word down there in the Capitol, believe me.
Watch out, Sarah. Watch out.
Yep. That's right.
Things to know.
Sarah, congratulations on your win. It was fun talking to you a couple of times as a candidate. How are things so far this first week?
Well, thanks so much for having me on here. I'm so excited. I am over the moon. It's really hard to describe how exciting this is, how grateful I am to be here, how eager I am to get to work, and how proud I am to be representing my district.
And Representative Neubauer, do you have a caucus that now has a majority of new members?
Yes, we do. 23 new members, 22 continuing members.
That's really something.
But that's
got to be exciting in its own way for the veterans, as you would say, to see all of these new faces, all of this new blood. It's not that you don't miss the folks who aren't there anymore, but this has got to be kind of a rush for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we, of course, had some great folks who chose to retire this year, went on to run for other things. And we have 23 new people who are so excited to be in the legislature. They worked really hard in primaries, in tough purple districts, in many cases, to get here. They come from all parts of the state. They have diverse professional, personal backgrounds, bring great experience, and we're just thrilled to have them joining, especially in a new era where the margins have tightened, right, between Democrats and Republicans in the Assembly and Senate, and we're really hoping for a shift in the way things work in the Capitol.
Well, that would sure be nice, but that was certainly not the rhetoric that we heard from Speaker Robin Voss and from Senate Republican Leader Devin Lemahieu, whose opening speeches were extremely partisan in my view. But I think they're trying to help unify a smaller Republican majority. But as I understand correctly, Leader Neubauer, even though the Republicans no longer have near super majorities in the Assembly and in the Senate, am I hearing right that they're trying to basically give themselves super majorities on committees?
Yes, so they removed a number of committee positions for Assembly Democrats going into this year. That was, of course, extremely disappointing because we picked up 10 seats and somehow have less spots on most of the important committees going into this year. You know, Speaker Voss would like things to stay the same. He's enjoyed the power that he's had under the gerrymander, and I think he is going to continue to act like he has two-thirds almost of the chamber until he can't. Yeah. And I do think that his members are going to start pushing back if they refuse to take up popular policy and if they keep acting like they don't need to listen to voters from both sides of the aisle.
Right. And that no doubt led to what the governor proposed at the start of the week with citizen initiative and referendum for constitutional amendments. And we may get back to that in this segment. But Senator Chieski, let me ask you a bit about your own goals, priorities, expectations. Now that, you know, the rush of the inauguration is past, what is it that you'd like to get down to work and do?
Well, I'll say that after working so hard to get elected, it has been a gap of time, these 2 months, where I've just been so eager to get in and to get to work. And so I couldn't be more excited to have our first session day yesterday. And I will continue to advocate for the things that have been my priorities along the campaign trail, including K-12, public education, our rural communities, and of course, mental health, because I'm a mental health provider, and that's been a primary focus of mine for my whole adult life. I've been honored to be put on the committees for mental health, substance abuse, and families, for agriculture, and for education. And so my goal is to be a really active member on each of those committees, to learn all I can, and to be a voice of hopefully some compromise, some change, and some advocacy for things that we really need to see happen and that we heard at each of the doors. Oftentimes, one of these issues was commonplace when I worked all across the district.
I was going to say, it wasn't just, if you weren't hearing about a specific issue, you were hearing the specific message of working together better, I'm sure.
Oh, constantly. I mean, one of the things that was pivotal for people that wanted to vote, they wanted to see a change. They wanted to see people work together. They wanted to see us get things done. And I'll be honest, that's one of the things that, I've lived my life being very proactive. And I've been a busy person. I have 6 kids. I've managed jobs, multiple jobs at the same time. And so all I want to do is be productive. And it's been disappointing a bit to see some of the barriers to that productivity, starting out even including like the schedule that we were supposed to vote in. I voted against because we don't work nearly enough in the second year of our term because of the upcoming elections each 2 years. And so I'm hopeful, again, to get to work and to be listening to and fulfilling my obligation to my constituents, which is work hard, work together, get things done.
Exactly. The working hard part appeared to be missing from that schedule, Representative Neubauer, that so many Democrats did vote against it, because we have joked in past years, in 2024, 2022, 2020, about Republicans putting the legislature on roughly a 9-month paid vacation. They just went ahead and baked that into the calendar for 2026, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a member who has served in the assembly for quite some time, Chris Stanicki, who reminded us that they used to legislate into May. And since I've been here, it's pretty much February. We're done with our work in the Capitol and everybody is back home campaigning. And really, that's not how the legislature is supposed to work. We're paid full time for 2 years. And often at the end of session in February, we're rushing through over 100 bills, not able to really give them real consideration. And of course, there are new challenges that come up. So we should work harder. We should work more days. We should work longer into the second year. We got elected to do a job and we should do it.
Yeah, because again, it's a full time salary, and yet from the cuts that we played in our last hour, from Representative Snodgrass, from Senator Smith, from Senator Royce, what they chose to work on for day two and day three was ramming through this constitutional amendment on voter ID. So we already heard a couple of sound bites about it, Representative Neubauer, but I want you to weigh in as well that of all the things that Republicans could have worked on, this was one of the first things on the docket.
Yeah, you know, I'll note, Sarah just mentioned, there are a lot of issues that came up on the campaign trail. I knocked on doors in my own district, I knocked on doors in every competitive assembly district over the last year. And you know what I didn't hear one time? I want you to take that state law on voter ID and put that into the Wisconsin Constitution. I heard about addressing costs for working families, about education, the environment, supporting our kids and our elderly folks, right? There are a lot of important issues that the people of Wisconsin have asked us to address. This is just not one of them.
No, and I understand the timeline. They want to rush this through and get this on the April ballot when there's also the state Supreme Court election, the state superintendent election, and everything else. But again, it just says so much about the priorities. Senator Kieske, let me ask you, and it's one thing to talk to leadership, and you understand why leadership, sets the agendas that they set. But then there's the rank and file members, and I wonder if already in these early phases, have you struck up some conversations? I won't say friendships because it's still early, but some conversations with some of your Republican colleagues that you think might lead to some of these, bipartisan initiatives.
Well, let me say I have introduced myself to them and extended a hand. I also had a meeting with the assembly member that is a Republican in my district, along with, of course, knowing the other two assembly members that are Democrats and working well with them. His name is Tony Kurtz, and we had a meeting in my office. Again, really wanting to start off with the foot of bipartisanship, asking that he and I can work together. We have the same constituents. We want to do good work. I believe that that's why he's in the legislature, too. And so I ask that whatever his priorities are, share them with me. Let's make sure that we work together as much as we possibly can. I understand we will disagree on some things, but we certainly can agree on much more than we disagree on. And my hope is that he takes me at my word and will work really hard to keep our offices in connection.
You've certainly made the effort, and Greta, I know the same happens over on the assembly side, but it feels different. It does not feel as congenial as it was in days gone by. I'm not asking you to psychoanalyze, some of your colleagues, but I think you share that assessment that there's definitely room for improvement in terms of improved relations across the aisle, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the reality is that we just picked up a lot of seats, right? We got fair maps in Wisconsin, which many of us have been working on for a decade. And it changed things in the legislature. We've got a lot more people who are in very competitive districts, both Democrats and Republicans, who have to look over both shoulders, be responsive to their constituents. Republicans aren't really happy about this new reality. I hope that they will settle in. I hope that they will remember that they are sent here by their constituents to work hard on their behalf and to get things done, right, to address the pressing challenges facing the state of Wisconsin. But I think everyone is getting used to a new status quo of a closer legislature, a more accountable legislature, and not everybody's happy about that.
No, but, there are things that you're going to have to jump into with the budget. There's certainly going to be discussion about a tax cut, how you tailor it exactly to the middle class. Maybe that can be a win-win. Maybe not so much Badger Care Medicaid expansion, but maybe at least postpartum expansion.
One would hope.
Maybe special education funding, that disparity between voucher schools and public schools. What we're trying to let people know is there's definitely room there for some win-wins if some more of your colleagues are willing to not march in lockstep.
Absolutely. And we've seen that, right? We've seen those Republican members out on the campaign trail talking about those same issues. My opponent had postpartum on a mailer. So I hope that those members will push back against their leadership and will make clear that their constituents want them to pass popular policy that will improve their lives.
Well, keep the welcome mat out for them, that they're always welcome to talk with you and potentially vote with you on things that, again, the vast majority of Wisconsinites want. Democratic leader Greta Neubauer from the Assembly, new state senator Sarah Kieske, thank you both so much. Great to talk to you. Take care now.
Thank you.
All right.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In the first week of the new session of the Wisconsin State Legislature, Republicans fast-tracked a measure that would put a question on the ballot in the upcoming spring election that would enshrine voter ID in the state constitution. Two things on this. First, it is telling that Republicans made this their very first order of business. Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein responded to this, saying it's not cost of living or health care or gun violence that Republicans wanted to focus on, but a constitutional amendment. Telling, isn't it? But that leads to the second piece. Republicans are clearly doing this for politically motivated reasons. By having this on the spring election ballot, they're betting it will make it more likely that people who showed up to vote for Donald Trump in November will be heading to the polls to help elect right-wing candidate Brad Schimmel to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That election is on April 1st, so buckle up.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up Hour 1 of the Civic Media Spotlight, it's time to have a little fun. Maggie Dawn of the Maggie Dawn Show talks about how in 2025, instead of a New Year's resolution, she has New Year's intentions, and this time, it's to play more games. With listener input, she talks about some of the games that she looks forward to playing in 2025.
To the Civic Media Radio Network. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm coming to you from 540 AM WAUK all across southeastern Wisconsin. But don't worry, you can catch me anywhere if you've got the Civic Media app and all across the family of stations that are the Civic Media Talk Radio Network, joined by my producer, Cardi, and each and every one of you. Today, we're taking a little bit of a breather from some of the heavier political content of the day by talking about your resolutions, your intentions for the year. One of mine is to play more. Here they all are. This is my list of sort of generic intentions. I want to move more. I want to connect with people more. I want to make sure I'm giving myself plenty of time for creativity and just thinking about stuff. And I want to rest better, you know, sleep better, rest better. And today we're talking about one of my intentions, which is to play more. I'm a huge board game nerd, so we're talking about board games today. I got lots of great feedback on the text lines. A new texter from 715, hello, friend, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, texting in the Danger Noodle is a great game. Texter, tell me more. They're texting in from WFHR. I'm going to check that out. Maybe give it a little Google after we're off the air here. I'm always buying board games. Doesn't matter if it looks good. I'll pick that puppy up, add it to the ever-growing, ridiculously large collection of board games that I have. Let's see. My good friend Luke, my colleague here at Civic Media, saying he also loves him some board games, but nothing beats a good game of cribbage. Could not agree with you more, my friend. I spent many, many, perhaps an embarrassing number of hours when I was in law school at Madison, sitting in Paul's Club, the old Paul's Club before it moved, in that front table, if you've ever been there, Paul's Club right on State Street. It's a little, I call it, it's got like a cozy, very intimate feel in Paul's Club. I love taverns and bars like that. Had a great window. You could watch the whole world walk by on State Street. And a bunch of us would always get together on Sundays, grab one or both of those front tables and sit there again for a slightly embarrassing number of hours and play a whole heck of a lot of cribbage. And of course, my other favorite card game, Euchre. Both of those games, in my opinion, and card games writ large, I would say, are just incredible vehicles for smack talking. And I love in Euchre, you can play in teams. You can do that, of course, in cribbage as well. So much fun. I don't know. Is it like a bad thing if I have probably upwards of 10 different cribbage boards? I got the custom boards. I got the boards shaped like Wisconsin. I got the mini boards. I got the travel boards. I got the inherited boards from my folks. I got the cheapo boards. Too many cribbage boards. Again, a little embarrassing. I don't know. You tell me. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What's your favorite kind of play, especially board game play? I want to hear from you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Sherry from Horicon asking me if Pandemic, one of my favorite games, can be played with two people. Yes, Sherry, it can. It's a lot of fun with two people. It's challenging with two people. I'll just say that. Sherry loves her some Yahtzee and chess and backgammon. I just gave the old backgammon a shout out not too long ago. Let's see what else we've got. Gary from Madison saying his favorite card game is strip poker. Well, Gary, you'll be Gary. Doing that one without my participation. I do think I did it like once or twice in college. You know, a few too many cocktails, you get a little frisky. Yeah, not anymore, y'all. A texter from 563 listening in the WAUK. Hello, friend. Says Santa brought her granddaughter the board game Operation. Everybody loves a little Operation, right? Her parents being both physicians, and they are all excited to play. Brian from Green Bay. Great board game is Wynish or Yinish, Y-I-N-S-H. Never heard of it. Part of the Jip series. I love this. I'm learning all kinds of board game stuff today. Thanks, Brian. I will check that out. Michael from Tosa saying, hey, Maggie, have you ever played Splendor, a jewelry collecting card dealing game? Well, I like me some baubles, my friend. So I will be checking that out for sure. He says it's very easy to play and a great strategy game. Those are my favorite kind. Sue from Franklin says, apparently cribbage is a regional thing. I didn't know that. I know Euchre is pretty regional. A few years ago, I was with some coworkers from Oklahoma, Colorado, and Connecticut. None of them had even heard of it. What a shame. Ryan from Green Bay saying, cribbage, is it bad that I have 70 decks of cards? No, Brian, note that I didn't even tell you how many decks of cards I have, because I have decks of cards from Vegas. I have decks of cards from casinos in the state of Wisconsin. I have decks of cards that are specialty decks of cards. I buy decks of cards when I travel. Are you getting it? Yeah. Big, huge game nerd. You can never have enough decks of cards. Hey, got a little time to spare? Whip out a deck of cards. You can always at least play solitaire the good old-fashioned way. And don't flip over every card if you're playing solitaire. Got to do it three cards at a time. Otherwise, it's not a game. Mark from Prairie du Sac says, I have to relearn cribbage every gosh darn time I play it, but my dad used to play a solitaire version of it. Oh, very cool. John, my friend on the phone lines, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Do you have a favorite or favorite games?
Yes, Maggie. You haven't even mentioned the word Scrabble. You have a Scrabble dictionary even.
John, I love Scrabble. Do you have a favorite Scrabble word, my friend?
No, I was never good at it, but my girlfriend had a Scrabble dictionary.
It's a wonderful game because I always happen to learn at least one new word when I play Scrabble. John, thanks so much for calling and listening, my friend. I'm going to do a little summary when we come back after the bottom of the hour. Pam Yockey's got your farm update. And then I'm going to move on to my thoughts on 2024 in the law and what all of that means to you, what we should be keeping on our eye on coming up this year. More gaming action when we come back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's...
Welcome to the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome one of Wisconsin's very own, comedian Tom Clark. Then Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller and I discuss award season. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103. Yes. Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is WISS Berlin Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The Israel-Hamas ceasefire is holding, humanitarian aid passing through the Rafah border crossing with Gaza, and three more hostages released today. They've been sent home from an Israeli hospital in stable condition. ABC's Ian Pannell in Tel Aviv.
Just been watching a video of the former hostages being reunited with their families. Each one of them, their mothers went together with the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, to go and collect their daughters. And then we saw video phone calls that had taken place.
And we've seen food, blankets, and other supplies, plus fuel tankers passing through checkpoints into Gaza, more than 550 trucks. TikTok resuming service in the U.S. today, lifting its self-imposed blackout after President-elect Trump vowed to put a federal ban on hold while once he takes office. The app is still apparently not available for download in the app stores. That's in line with the original language of the ban. This is ABC News.